All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Clobbering Time, the pro wrestling podcast. My name is Tom Bryan. I am a writer slash editor for StereoGum.com. And with me, as always, is my friend Damian Abraham.
Yo, how's it going?
It's good, man. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. Yeah, like, sorry, everyone. I think we had a huge show planned, and then it kept getting postponed. So we decided to make a huge show to take its place in the meantime.
Also, Damien is like an international fucking recording artist who had like music festivals to play and shit like that. Played with a former WCW superstars, the Misfits, this past weekend.
And also, Matt Cross was there. From
Lucha. Oh, no shit. Son of Havoc?
Son of Havoc was in the house.
And, did you meet him?
No. We were in and out so quick, unfortunately, that I didn't get a chance to talk to him. But I talked to him about potentially coming on a sister show of this show at some point.
Well, we'll have him come on this show, man.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have him come on this show, too. I think that's the thing is, like, don't worry. I'm working on a wrestler to come on this show that I think will be pretty fun right now. And not that, you know, Son of Havoc wouldn't be a great guest to have on the show too, but
I feel like I should know more about him other than the fact that he is Son of Havoc and Lucha Underground. And I don't, like, I wouldn't recognize him without the weird, like, black, like, underwear he wears on his head.
Well, I saw him wrestle up here, 'cause he's like kind of a localish guy, right? Like, being from I think Cleveland, right? He's based out of, or
maybe, I don't know.
Pretty sure it's Cleveland. So he would come up and wrestle some of the, like, sort of small bigger indie shows that would happen around here. And I'd see him in that stuff, but I had no idea that he was a punk hardcore kid in the way that he is till recently.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. Great.
So in the time that we have been away, many, many, many things have happened in the world of professional wrestling.
Oh, yes.
And we got a big guest on this week. We got Danko Jones, and we have a fun, kind of long conversation about the sort of 80s wrestling he grew up on. And
yeah,
so it's that's going to be fun. So we're not going to pick apart every single thing that happened in wrestling while we were not recording podcasts.
No, and I think the thing is there's, like, there thankfully is so much to talk about that I imagine some of these things will be relevant in the weeks to come. So they'll come up again and we can talk about them then.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully we're going to try to be a little better about doing this every week.
Yes.
But again, you know, we're grown-ups and stuff. So stuff happens. One thing that I did want to bring up was a person who is special to both Damien and myself. One CM Punk had an eventful couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He went into the Octagon, something he'd been working up to doing for several years, and then he got wrecked in, I would say, humiliating fashion. Would you say that?
Well, like, I don't know. Like, it's such a, like, because I would say no, because kind of everyone thought that this was going to probably happen, right? And the fact that he got there and did it, I think is the brave move that, you know, like, I don't think there's any humiliation because he did it, you know, and we all knew that he wasn't going to win.
But he lost in bad, like, bad fashion. Like, he got his ass beat, like, severely beaten.
Yeah,
like he got nothing in.
I think in retrospect, they kind of, like, they used him to get Mickey Gall over.
Oh, sure.
Like,
sure.
They saw this guy who has a big future, and they're like, oh, let's put him in a, you know, an amazing high profile. Like, that guy's a star now, mm-hmm, off of this. But I don't know. Like, I think maybe it's because I have just, like, complete and utter disbelief at how someone could, you know, willingly put themselves into that position, especially someone with, you know, what, from what I understand, is enough money to not have to put themselves in that kind of position.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So that's why I'm like, all respect,
making money on it, even though he got a huge payday, but just the years of training, like, and all that stuff that he must have had to put into it.
Yeah, like, he could have, like, I was thinking about this the other day, if, like, he had finished WWE and you know, when he came out kind of hot off that whole thing and just really gone after Hollywood, you know, or really gone after something else and pursued that in the same sort of way he pursued fighting MMA, where he'd be now, you know, like maybe he not as well off, because he made, from what I understand, close to $1 million.
Yeah, so I heard 500,000, but
I heard 500,000, but then I heard he was going to get a bonus for pay-per-view buys, and then I heard that at pay-per-views it did really well. So maybe like, yeah, like, yeah, well, like,
the point is he'll do fine, but
yeah,
like when we hear that, like, I don't know, for me, when I hear that, like, it's you know, it's just brave that he went and did it, and good for him for doing that. It's like, I get that. I do, and it's respectable, and it's the thing that he always wanted to do, and good on him for that. And I don't know, something about him, like, making his, like, believe in yourself speech after getting just his face destroyed, so he had, like, a little goblin ear hanging off the side of his head at the end of it.
It did look like the hobgoblin, that ear.
It was so gnarly. But it's just, like, I don't know, man, if I was, like, really, really fond of somebody and felt like that's my dude out there, and then he was like, you know what, I'm gonna walk away from this thing that you love me for, and it's always been my dream to, like, step in front of a moving train. Like, I really think I can do it. I think it's gonna be a long uphill struggle. I'm gonna train for years to step in front of this moving train, but it's what I really want to do, and I hope you guys support me in it. And then he trained for years, and then he stepped in front of a train and got run over by a train. I would be like, well, you're fucking stupid for thinking it was a good idea to step in front of the train.
Yeah, but I think, like, you know, I don't know. There's something about just, like, you know, like the fact that he stepped in front of a train, you know, like, I'm just like, and he survived, you know, like he did survive. Like, I don't know how he's doing now, but he didn't have to go to hospital.
Well, okay, what do you think the worst case – I mean, I guess the worst case scenario is he could have gotten killed in the octagon, but nobody's ever gotten killed in the octagon before.
Yeah, like no one in a UFC octagon.
So yeah, yeah.
That definitely has never, ever happened. And, like, yeah, I don't think it ever would happen. But
so
like,
how
yeah,
far worst removed case scenario, from the worst case scenario was it?
It was pretty close. Like, I think worst case scenario, he, you know, steps in the ring, first punch is a knockout. But no, actually, no, maybe not. Maybe that would have been, people would have been like, oh, it's just a fluke.
No, that would have probably been worse than what happened.
Yeah. Like, I think there's like, you know, like it's, it's, I wish he had gone to Bellator and they'd given him a stunt fight and they'd given him someone else with his skill level, to fight and given, you know, like, giving him that Batista moment, like the same thing Batista got to do.
Yeah, or Bobby Lashley.
Or Bobby Lashley got to do, you know, like where they got to fight, but at a level that was up to their skill set. But like, you know, he had, it's like, you know, it's like when you hear about a band signing to a major label, it's like, I can't blame you. You know, that's a lot of money. And that was the big time, the big leagues, and it plays to your ego and stuff. And it's like, you know, like, what was he going to say? Like, no, I don't want to fight for UFC. I'm going to fight for this little tiny one. But, well, that's what Batista did, I guess.
Yeah, and Bobby Lashley.
And Bobby Lashley.
Every other pro wrestler other than Brock Lesnar who has ever gotten into MMA, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's also weird because, like, I kind of wonder if UFC didn't offer Bobby Lashley or didn't, you know, I imagine they would have gone after and sort of actively pursued Batista, you would think, if Batista had wanted to fight at that level, but maybe not. Like, maybe it's like post Bellator. This is like it's like an advent of since Bellator that UFC has to kind of make these things happen.
I don't actually know jack shit about MMA. Well, like, I know nothing about MMA.
There's two main companies, right? Like, there's UFC, and then a distant second is Bellator. But Bellator.
Yeah, I mean, I know that much.
Yeah.
I know more than I know about role playing games, which we'll get into later.
Oh gosh, are you going to have to learn about role playing games tonight? I think.
I guess so.
But no, I think that's the thing. Is like, it now that there's this other company that has money because it's owned by Spike, which is owned by Viacom, that they're willing to kind of throw at fighters and fights. Especially fighters and fights that are entertaining in the mainstream. So CM Punk is 100% someone they would sign, I would think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sorry I got this cough, man.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. I think everyone at home knows exactly what coughing feels like.
Good. Well, I hope you don't. I hope you never have to experience the misery of coughing. But we should also talk about the other big thing to us that happened in our radio silence, which was the end of the Cruiserweight Classic, which was just, I mean, it was beautiful. It was just a great, like, display of wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
everything awesome about WWE right now was in that.
Yeah, it's just like one of those things where, you know, it was, you know, and I've heard other people make the comparison to, you know, ECW One Night Stand, but it was that one, where just everything clicked, and it just felt like everything, like, this is, if I had control, this is what it would look like. This is exactly what I'd be looking at each and every week.
And I don't think they were chasing a real big audience for it or anything. I think it was just like, Triple H is enough of a wrestling fan that he could be like, you know, I have the resources to just make something awesome happen for the sake of it. So let's do that.
Yeah. Like, I think it also, you know, on for them, you know, they obviously have a content beast that they have to feed constantly now with that network. But I think it also, it kind of like gave them an opportunity to, you know, hopefully usher in a new era as far as the way they look at international talent and the way they look at, you know, like you hope that this is a taste of what the future holds a little bit.
Yeah. And also it's just a kind of way for sort of, it's like the WWE Network's version of like, I don't know, the Nick on Cinemax, like just chase some like critical acclaim and prestige.
Oh, that's an amazing analogy. I'm just picturing Noam Dar putting cocaine on places that belong or something.
I'm glad the Cruiserweight Classic was not as gory as the Nick.
No. That would definitely be more One Night Stand.
Like Grand Metalik did not have to have his like lungs removed or anything.
But it was, yeah, it was, there were just so many great moments in that tournament, and it was also, it was neat to see because it had kind of a slow start.
Yep.
And then to have it kind of build to what it built to was, it was awesome.
I love seeing wrestlers cry, man. I love seeing emotional moments in wrestling. Those are like, you can't really manufacture those. Mm-hmm. So like the stuff with Brian Kendrick and Daniel Bryan was just awesome. Like the stuff with Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. Like TJ, what did you think of TJ Perkins winning?
It was surprising, but it now makes sense to, like, you know, like since kind of like it, like since I was like, okay, well, it's not Kota Ibushi, I guess. Like it's not Zack Sabre Jr., I guess. Like I think it makes sense now that I see him with that belt and see him with the other, you know, the champions together and stuff. It just like, it makes sense. And you know, like I liked Manic. I liked what was Manic before Suicide, but he wasn't Suicide. He was just Manic in TNA.
I don't know.
He was Manic under the hood, but he's definitely a super talented wrestler. And this is just like, you know, you hope this is the opportunity. Like we all have our fears as wrestling fans of the worst case scenario, which is that, you know, 6 months from now, this belt is on, you know, or the Ascension or something.
Yeah.
But you know, like, but you know, like, I don't know. What did you think of him winning?
I kind of really liked it. Mm-hmm. Like there was obviously like extenuating circumstances, right? So like, from, you know, the word around the campfire, at least I don't think it's been confirmed, but they apparently tried to sign both Kota Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr. Mm-hmm. and both of them turned down their contracts. Mm-hmm. And those are the two like obvious stars from the show. And I wonder like how hard they must have lowballed them for them to say no. But I mean, I guess those guys are, you know, making bank on the independents. But like, but So T.J. Perkins is this guy who's been around for forever. Like, the one time I ever saw him wrestle live was like Kevin Steen in Ring of Honor just pretty much squashed him. Like, I think he might have done like a stretcher referee stoppage type of thing. And he's just been doing stuff like that for ever, basically. And it's kind of amazing to see somebody who's a known quantity and who's, you know, been all over the place and done things, but like, I never considered him like a headliner or anything. And to see him like put in that position, like, that's awesome. Like, good for him.
Well, you got to think post AJ Styles and the success they're having right now with AJ Styles and how basically he is, you know, like carrying the company on his back to a certain extent, from, you know, just the way he's been since he's got into the WWE.
Especially for SmackDown. I should say, the Backlash pay-per-view where AJ Styles won was like an hour away from my house and I could have gone and I didn't because my thinking was like, fuck SmackDown. Like, SmackDown doesn't have anything I really want to see. I probably should have gone to that. It would have been cool to see AJ win.
Yeah, that moment is the moment, you know, like that's the, that to me was like, you know, like one of those moments of, I don't know, it felt like real emotion because it felt like something that I didn't believe I'd ever really get to see.
But then when it happened, it felt inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they must be thinking now in this company, like, what else is out there? Like, what else have we been overlooking that could be this good?
And TJ is like a good looking guy. He's charismatic. Mm-hmm. You know, he seems like a genuine person. Like, and people see him and they want him to do well. And like, I like that he wrestles in Jordans or whatever. I kind of like all the wrestlers who wrestle in Jordans. I don't know why. Like, I'm not a sneaker guy. Wait, I don't even know if they're Jordans, but like, the, you know, the Usos have started wrestling in them since they turned to be bad guys, and like, that's cool. I don't know. I like it.
What about Shane McMahon?
Oh, does he wrestle in them?
Yeah, that's his thing.
I
mean,
I like Shane McMahon. I'm not mad at Shane McMahon.
Oh, well, that puts you at odds. Like, I'm not mad at Shane McMahon either. But I have learned that he is very much despised by certain members of the wrestling community.
Well, I don't know. I guess I'm part of the segment of the population who like saw Kurt Angle throw him through that plate of glass.
Say that Kurt Angle match, that amazing Kurt Angle match.
Oh man, I remember like just losing my mind watching that. Just like this is one of those like rare moments where you're like, is this happening? Like, should somebody stop this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Kurt Angle's like one of those people that, you know, he's like, you know, you hope that guy gets another chance to come back. You hope that, like, health wise, he's good. And they
figure, I don't know if he is.
I don't know if he is either.
Mentally, health wise, I don't know. But, I mean, for like in, you know, 2000 or whatever, like, he was my favorite wrestler.
Like, I think, honestly, he might be one of the best of all time. Like, he could be funny, he could be actually kind of funny.
Yeah, he didn't do that at all in TNA, so I don't know if he still has that like part of his brain anymore.
I bet you he does, but they just probably wanted him to be. By that point, it was so, you know, like him and that Samoa Joe feud really set the tone for his entire run there.
Yeah, but like they tried to make Samoa Joe funny.
Yep, they really did.
Flapjack, get out of there. That was the sound of my dog drinking from the toilet. Everybody out there in Radio Land.
So all you foliage artists now have that sound for all the Foley work they have to do.
Oh, good. Well, good for them. this is an important sound. You got to have that in your arsenal.
You got to have
So I'm happy for TJ. I think it's kind of awesome that he won. One thing that I worry about a tiny bit is that they only have people from the Cruiserweight Classic in their Cruiserweight division. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why they don't throw Neville in there or whatever. It just seems like the, like, hey, here's these Cruiserweight guys. Remember them? We're going to have these same six guys fight each other over and over again.
Yeah, like, you think at some point they're going to start, you know, slipping other people into that division. Maybe they just want to, you know, help establish them by having them face each other first, but... Yeah, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, why is one small guy in this division and another small guy in the heavyweight division?
Yeah. It was like, it's funny. Like, they had a couple of the guys from the Cruiserweight Classic on NXT. They wrestled TM61, the Australian team. Mm-hmm. And Tom Phillips, their you know, regular play-by-play guy, was like, oh no, these guys are cruiserweights. Like the TM61's not going to be able to keep up with them. And the TM61 guys are basically the same size as the other guys. Like, they don't have some magical, mystical power because they weigh under 220 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, that should put them at a disadvantage, logically.
And I think, like, you know, now people know that the different belts can headline a pay-per-view. Like, it's just about how you build it, right? Like, so, you know, if you put Finn Balor in that, you know, and you put someone else in that, you can build up to something that could probably headline a pay-per-view just as easily as they could if they had, a heavyweight belt.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, I hope they keep doing it. I hope they do another Cruiserweight Classic next year. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they might do a women's championship thing, which would probably mean, like, bringing in all these people from Shimmer or whatever, I imagine, if they do it the same way.
It reminds me of White Rapper. You know, I love that show so much, the Ego Trip White Rapper show.
Oh my God, the White Rapper show? Oh. We've never talked about the White Rapper show. I love the fucking White Rapper show.
It was so good, eh?
I used to see John Brown in my neighborhood in Brooklyn.
What?
Yes.
Oh my God.
He wore his like ghetto revival hoodie.
Dylon might be one of... Oh no, it was not Dylon. What was the guy's name that beefed with him on that show?
Sully.
Sully. Dylon was on the Puff Daddy show.
Yeah, he was on Making the Band, which was also a great show.
Yeah, Dylon was also a favorite rapper of mine too, from that reality TV show moment in time. But
I liked Ness, the guy from Philly who was like sort of like Beanie Siegel white.
Oh yeah. I liked my favorite moment in it is when John Brown's doing his thing, and it's like, I think it's Brand Nubian's there. It's definitely Sadat X, and I can't remember who's with him. And they just lay into him so hard, and they just tear him apart. And you just felt, I kind of felt bad for poor John Brown after that.
I don't think he cared that much. So I went to the finale party for that show. In Brooklyn,
Ari the Rugged Man played.
What's that?
Did Ari the Rugged Man play?
No. I think maybe like MC Search did like two verses, but mostly they just had contestants on the show. Like they had that Juggalo girl from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Ghetto Child.
They had John Brown and they had somebody else, I think. I don't know, man. That was a long time ago.
Oh, actually, you know what? I think Jason Green from like Panthers and Orchid went to that too. I remember him telling me that way back then. He's like, yeah, I went to that thing. But he maybe went to the final, because remember they had the final on the show.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And that's Ari the Rugged Man plays on that, and he's dressed up in a devil suit.
He did do that. Yep, I remember that now. Oh, anyway, God. Everybody, I don't know where you could possibly watch Ego Trip's The White Rapper Show. Maybe it's on YouTube or something. I hope it's on YouTube.
I hope it is too.
You should do that if you can.
Yeah.
But we should get to our guest.
Absolutely.
You wanna set him up? Oh, you know him better.
Yeah, absolutely. Our next guest is lead singer, front person of Danko Jones, one of my favorite all time live garage rock bands. Seeing them in the like mid-90s, late-90s, and then now a huge, giant rock band that has had songs all over professional wrestling.
Yeah, he's had the theme of two different pay-per-views, right?
Yep, yeah, and he's also, you know, beloved by... we'll get into all this in a second. So let's get Danko Jones on the phone right now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Clobbering Time. I am here once again with my friend Damian Abraham and with Damian's friend, Danko Jones. Hi, Danko. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Damian.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
It's going really good. I'm very excited to be on here. Very honored you asked me on the Clobbering Time podcast.
Well, I know when I've been at your house, I've noticed that there's a shelf of prominent wrestling books, like some very great autobiographies and biographies of prominent wrestlers. So I know you're a learned wrestling fan.
To a certain point, yes, I went deep for a few years when I was a kid. I probably went deep with wrestling deeper than I ever did with music. So for a while there, I think my mom got a little concerned. She started it though. She got me my first wrestling magazine, and that just kicked it off.
When was that?
That was a long time ago. It was a Pro Wrestling Illustrated year-end issue with the Road Warriors on the cover. They had just won the AWA Tag Team Championship, and so the Legion of Doom had just entered AWA with a bang, as we all know. Mm-hmm. And I saw the cover. I wanted the cover. I wanted the magazine for the cover. And then those magazines for, you know, an 11-year-old kid, 12-year-old kid, 13-year-old kid, I devoured it. You know, I didn't know it was like it went this far reaching and this wide, and there were so many other wrestlers I hadn't even seen or heard of. And it got to the point where I would just they were mythical figures because they weren't on the television where, you know, in Toronto where I lived, it was Maple Leaf Wrestling. And then you got the Buffalo WUTV WWF feed. So wrestlers like, you know, Buzz Sawyer and Tommy Rich, Kevin Sullivan, Jimmy Garvin, even Hulk Hogan before he went to the WWF, these guys were like two-dimensional superheroes to me.
So you were reading about them, but you weren't able to watch them.
No, I could just see sometimes Maple Leaf Wrestling on Channel 11 they'd have regional matches, but then they'd go to certain like the Mid-Atlantic wrestling. So I'd get to see like Dickie Slater. I got to see Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat, which eventually became my favorite tag team partnership.
Dory Funk. You just call them tag teams.
What did I say?
Tag team partnership.
Yep.
That's the formal. That's how you formally refer to it, I think, too.
Yeah. But then when, you know, wrestling kind of got streamlined and then people like Dusty Rhodes joined the WWF, I was like, oh my God, now I can really see a Dusty Rhodes in action, you know.
But, you know, it's funny because, like, that Channel 11 Maple Leaf Wrestling, like, I remember that too. The quality of wrestling would vary so much because you'd see like Steamboat, but then you'd also just see some like random Canadian regional wrestling match too.
It was so haphazardly put together, which added to its charm. Mm-hmm. But I do remember this one time, and they would never be allowed to air it on television these days. But it was a match between Snuka and Ray Crippler Stevens. And Ray Stevens just kept pile driving Snuka onto the cement outside the ring. Like he did it over half a dozen times. This is at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday afternoon. And I still remember how shocked I was to see it. It really kind of made a crazy impression on me.
Was he bleeding all over the place?
He was bleeding. They didn't censor it. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And these two grown men, one of them was just pile driving this guy. I mean, I still, when I think about it and how young I can't believe they aired it. Mm-hmm.
It's funny because wrestling violence, you know, like gets like a pass in a way, like not as much anymore, but like the blood in wrestling was a lot more, it felt like a lot more family friendly than horror movies.
Well, the thing is, back then they hadn't come clean. So they hadn't come out and said that this is all fake. I mean, I remember me and my friends, I was even talking about this leading up to the podcast. I had in my school, there was like, we had speeches, like year end speeches where, you know, it was kind of like a competition, like a debating team or whatever. And I remember I came up with the idea to come up with a speech that proved wrestling was real. I was in grade 7 and I was convinced it was real. And then 2020 had a spotlight on it. And that's where Dr. D, David Schultz, body slammed the ABC journalist. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, what guy was it? John Stossel? Is it Stossel?
Yeah, Stossel, yeah.
John Stossel, that's right.
That's a great YouTube clip.
Oh, an unbelievable YouTube clip.
Well, that thing aired I guess it aired at 2020 at like 10 o'clock at night, and it was all past our bedtime. There was only one kid in our class who saw it. He told us he was going to watch it the night before. So we were all waiting for him to arrive at school, and then we all gathered around him. I still remember it. And he goes, "Guys, it's fake." We were all – I was crushed.
Do you remember when they did that special years later about wrestling again? And I think it was Fox did it. And it was the same sort of thing, but it was like – it had like wrestlers under hoods being like, "Here's how we do this move, and here's how we do this move." And it was like, it was in the wake of that Fox show that was exposing how magic was fake.
Oh yeah.
And then they did the wrestling one. They're like, "Wrestling too. Look."
No, I never saw that.
It was like everybody pretty much already knew at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're just ruining it for the rest of us now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I guess, like, as a kid, you know, it's really only WWF at the time was kind of, like, the only kind of, like, game in town as far as Toronto wrestling stuff or Canadian wrestling stuff, other than Maple Leaf stuff, right?
Yes. I want to say yes. Eventually, you know, Maple Leaf Wrestling was, you know, bought out by the WWF, and then it just, I think Toronto became like a WWF hub. Mm-hmm. But before then, it was an NWA hub, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Like Maple Leaf Gardens was a very significant place for pro wrestling, right? Like that was like one of the hallowed kind of arenas for it on the East Coast of North America.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the like bigger territories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we had Tiger. Who was it? Tiger Singh?
Was it? I don't. That is not familiar to me.
And he would,
I know who he is, but he wasn't familiar to me in terms of like the region.
Yeah, like I didn't get to see it. This was before my time, but I guess you used to have these like over the top battles with the original Sheik, and the two of them would just kind of go at it, and it would be, you know, sold out Maple Leaf Gardens type fair.
That's way before my time.
Me too. Me too.
So, yeah. Danko, you were drawn to the AWA in particular, like based on the magazines?
I was drawn to NWA.
Okay. Instead of the, like, because you would just see the pictures for the most part, right?
Yeah, you just saw the pictures for NWA and AWA. But NWA, to me, I figured it out. NWA was like the kind of the majors, and AWA kind of, I mean, when I got into it, Bob Backlund was the WWF champion. Nick Bockwinkle was the AWA champion. And then for NWA, it was take your pick among the three, Harley Race, Ric Flair, and I don't know who else, Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
So that was the time that I really was into wrestling. And I never saw Nick Bockwinkle wrestle until, I think, YouTube. Or until the WWE started to reissue those DVD sets in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I finally got to see like Nick Bockwinkle actually, you know, wrestle. But I mean, I still loved wrestlers in the AWA, and I believe Jerry the King Lawler was an AWA guy before he went to WWF or WWE. And that's the thing is, and plus his connection with Andy Kaufman, when our band's song in 2006 was the theme song for the WWE Backlash pay-per-view special.
Whoa.
Jerry the King Lawler threw to our song on the air, and that was in 2006, up to that point, that was one of like my personal career highlights, that Jerry the King Lawler threw to our song. And I mean, I still, and then we were the theme song for last year's Royal Rumble, which I got a phone call from Damien going, I'm so,
yeah, I don't think you're going to pick your band, dude.
No, I don't think I'm ever going to get that honor. And that is like, that is really like something I'm kind of fucking bitter at.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
Nobody made you be in a band with a cuss word in the name.
I know, but like, you know, let's be honest. I think there's a lot of things preventing WWE from picking us as their song for a pay per view. The name is just, I think, most convenient.
Well, Jerry the King Lawler was also one of the color commentators for last year's Royal Rumble. And again, he threw to our song.
Whoa.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's happened twice.
So you guys are like, you're basically best friends now.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I'm glad you said it.
No, it's funny too, because you're the reason that I know Chris Jericho. Like that's the like.
Right. Yeah, that's right. We did a podcast with
you guys. I remember listening to that podcast, and you didn't really know who he was, right?
Yes, because Jericho is after my time with wrestling, but I know who he is. Like I know who he was. I knew who he was, but for some reason I thought he had longer hair until Fozzy came out.
And then I'm like, hair for a long time.
Yeah, he had the top knot. He was rocking the top knot before it was a thing on Queen Street West.
Right.
You know, like back in the day.
Yeah. I still don't. It's fuzzy to me, but I just know he was, there's two, Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho both had like long hair, long blonde hair, right?
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. See, like, you know, I'm sorry. I feel, you know, disconnected in that with that era, which is the era that, you know, wrestling became humongous. But for me, it's like, you know, I get goosebumps thinking about, you know, Boogie Woogie Man versus the Great Kabuki. Like, I think that feud is incredible.
And I think if you look and talk to a lot of people, like when you kind of stopped being into it, that's the period where wrestling changed, right? Like that was the late 80s was when you kind of had, you know, like just the two companies, WCW and WWF going forward. So, you know, I think that's probably why you didn't identify with it going forward. What was it? What was the moment? Do you remember when you stopped liking wrestling?
Yeah, because I really liked how underground and really makeshift and put together and cut and pasted NWA and AWA seemed. Mm-hmm. And WWF to a certain degree. But then when it got really streamlined and I think everybody caught on that it was fake, I think I couldn't shake the truth. I really got off on the fact that like there is a dude walking around who would maybe, you know, spit green mist at you, you know, and he's like, he calls himself the Great Kabuki and he's got hair. And I just thought he would like be walking around, you know, and people like Abdullah the Butcher was a real guy and Bruiser Brody, this is how they acted. So once I realized, you know, once it was the truth was out, I was kind of like, oh, you're right. Okay.
But it's funny, you know, do you like, you know, I know you're a huge Kiss fan. And did you feel the same kind of like shunning of Kiss when you realized that Gene Simmons was just kind of a long tongued guy who didn't know who Chrome were rather than a demon?
No, because I like the music. The music kept me interested, but I know where you're going with that. But it was still the music first. Mm-hmm. When I got over the whole superhero thing about Kiss, mm-hmm. I was like, well, you know, I really like the music though, so that kept me interested. Whereas with wrestling, I was like, I still love it, man. And that era really, I could watch it. I mean, I have DVDs where I just, you know, I'll just watch it. Or go on YouTube and when I'm feeling nostalgic and watch it. And there's still wrestlers I mean, they're rock stars to me. Like, you know, Mills Mascaras and Abdullah the Butcher, Bruiser Brody, the Von Erichs, that kind of stuff. Like, you know, that's magical to me.
Mm-hmm. You got to go to one of these conventions.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know where these are. I know I've heard of these things.
I went to one. I covered one for work last year. I profiled this guy, New Jack, who was an ECW wrestler. But before so they had this big indie wrestling show in New Jersey, and before the show, they had on all these, you know, like Baron Von Raschke and guys like this, and Jimmy Snuka and Jake the Snake Roberts, and they're all sitting at folding tables and charging people, you know, $10 for a picture with them.
I would totally load up my wallet and head down.
They have like what's the one they have in Charlotte? It's like the big NWA reunion or NWA fan fest.
It's called like I forget what it's called, but I know what you're talking about. It's called like WrestlePalooza or something weird like that.
WrestleCon. There's definitely WrestleCon, but I think this is called NWA Fan Fest, and it's just like, you know, Ric Flair, they'll have like, you know, you can actually, they have for extra money, they'll have like famous like feuds, and then you'll be in the middle, right? So you can have Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Ric Flair, and then you're in the between the two of them.
Doing what?
Just posing, dude. Just posing.
Maybe you hold the two of them apart.
Yeah, maybe you're holding them back.
They're about to start attacking each other again.
Well, I would love to do a promo with Flair. You know, like I'd pay a lot of money to do that.
He would probably accept your lot of money.
Yeah, he definitely would accept a lot of money.
Like I would do, okay, you pretend you're in the Four Horsemen. And you do a promo with Rick. I'd be like, yeah, who do I give my money to?
Well, that leads into something I wanted to ask you about, which is, you know, how much of who you are as a musician is informed by pro wrestling? Because watching you, I see Ric Flair in who you are.
My top three favorite promo guys, Piper's my favorite wrestler, period. I think he did some of the best promos, Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair. Those are the three best, for me, in my opinion, the three best promo guys. I mean, amazing promos. You know, the WWE did a great thing. They put out a three disc set, I think about 10 years ago. And it was the Superstars of Wrestling, I believe. And there was, there are a lot of promos there, and I watch the promos more than I do the bands, but there is a Easter egg that you can only find if you go online and, you know, use your remote control to find it, but you guys have probably seen it. It's a Piper Easter egg, and it's a Piper promo, and it is – I've seen it – oh, God, I've seen it over 20 times. Every single time it gives me goosebumps, and it is hands down the greatest promo I have ever seen in my life, because just talking to you about it right now, I'm getting goosebumps. It is the greatest promo. He does what he does. He goes nuts. He starts screaming, ranting and raving. And then he just ends it with why he does what he does. And he goes, because I fight, or something like that. And I'm just, and then the screen goes black, and it's like, it's so good. It's amazing. And Piper is my favorite promo guy. Dusty and Ric Flair are both amazing guys. Like, yeah. And there's Flair's. Yeah. There's definitely, I've lifted from Flair a lot of stuff, like in terms of, you know, the way I, you know, attack the stage and just perform, is there's definitely a loaded amount of Flair and Piper in there, and Dusty Rhodes too. I love Dusty Rhodes. He's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Damien, do you have any wrestlers you try to be like?
Oh gosh. When I'm up there, like, you know, like I think anyone who's a wrestling fan has definitely done the Fargo strut across the stage, or the Ric Flair strut, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But I've definitely done that numerous times. I've tried to do the Bam Bam Bigelow cartwheel a bunch of times. Succeeded, you know, failed a lot, but succeeded a couple times.
That's amazing.
I've definitely cut, like, you know, I've cut the Ric Flair promo, you know, modified, like the big one. Like, last year I spent more money on spilt marijuana than you made. You're talking to the Mishka wearing front seat of the car sitting. Anyway, you know, I've done that promo on stage.
Do you have like a general demeanor guy who you like look to?
Oh, I don't know. People would say probably like George the Animal Steel.
Oh, that's good.
But I think that's just based on, or Albert, but I think that's just based on follicle placement on my back. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say. Like, I think, man, you know, like, I guess, like, probably Sandman for, unfortunately, for a large chunk with the cans on my head was the guy that I would kind of go to. That's the thing, Danko, you left before things got really violent.
Like, yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, I checked in a few years later and I saw Mankind and I'm like, what the hell just happened? So, but oh, I should mention another promo guy that I love is Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
That's one that never comes up.
Yeah, that's true.
He's like got to be one. He's in my top four or five. Yeah, he's amazing.
Well, I guess he's a yelly promo, right?
Yeah, it's just the way he does it, though, is just so intense. And he comes off bigger than he would be normally because Brett is so low-key and chill. Mm-hmm. It just makes for a great juxtaposition. And then he's amazing, too.
You unfortunately did miss some of the most intense promos ever, which were during the Shawn Michaels and Brett the Hitman Hart feud with each other, where they were talking about each other's backstage indiscretions and promos. And, hey, Tom?
Yeah, well, I mean, all that is out there for you, though.
Yeah, that's true. You can go and watch all this stuff now. And also Chris Jericho's 1001 Holds promo.
This is a real, real great classic moment.
Yeah.
I should see that.
He was feuding with this guy, Dean Malenko, who was the man of 1,000 holds. Right. So Jericho decided that he was the man of 1,001 holds. And he like walked out to the ring with a list of all his 1,001 holds. And it's like the Saskatchewan spinning arm clutch and stuff like that. Like he just starts like making up names that are definitely not real things. And then like, every like fourth one, he just goes arm bar. He says it a bunch of times over and over again. There's no way to actually describe this and do it any sort of justice, but it was a really great moment.
It goes through a commercial break too.
Yeah,
he comes back. He's still doing it. And also, I heard this week on Conan's podcast, Disco Inferno claimed that he was the one who came up with that idea, Tom.
Okay. I don't doubt it. Disco Inferno seems like a clever individual.
He is very clever. He is very clever. That's another one you missed out on, Danko, that I think you would love. The one I was going to say, though, the one that I think could get you back into it is Shinsuke Nakamura, who is truly one of the most unbelievably charismatic movers in the ring ever, like ever.
Hmm.
I think you got to check him out. His big influences are Prince and Michael Jackson.
And Freddie Mercury.
And Freddie Mercury, too, yeah.
Okay, you've piqued my interest.
I think you'd like him. I think you'd be into it. And he also, you know, did MMA. Like, it's like, you know, like that whole thing about you being like, oh, I couldn't get past the fact that it wasn't, you know, like I knew it wasn't real anymore.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He will make you believe again, my friend. He will make you believe.
All right, I'll check. Yeah,
there's a whole kind of school of wrestlers whose entire philosophy is to kind of hit you as hard as possible without hurting you, mm-hmm. So it'll look as real as it can, even though everybody knows it's not real, real.
Yeah,
and that stuff is fun to watch.
I think that's the other thing is you know, like as much as you kind of you know witnessed the John Stossel wrestling is not real era, then there was this other era where it became like shoot style and it became trying to make it as real as possible or as close to real as possible.
Yeah. And that's the time that I think are we talking Mankind Goldberg kind of era or
a little bit after,
although those guys definitely like did what they could like Goldberg, especially was like, he was a total wrestling novice. He'd played pro football, but he says that when he came in, he like studied the UFC as much as he could and tried to do a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, and
that's when I started to get interested again.
Mm-hmm. And then right after that, Bob Mould started writing for WCW.
He did?
I've heard about that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember reading his name on a wrestling website that had no mention of wrestling and being like, could that be the same guy? Like, that doesn't seem like a very common name.
It's crazy to think that he's like breaking into wrestling at the same time that that band is like doing really well. Like, you know, so he's like selling, you know, like programs or helping set up the ring to kind of like pay his dues at the same time that Husker Du is kind of doing it.
No. This was, I remember this because it was when I was in college and it was when he started putting out solo albums that were like he put out a couple pretty sketchy solo albums there. Like where he got really into like electronic music.
Yeah. Stuff. No, but this is before the WCW era. This is back when he was still in Minnesota.
Oh, he was doing that in like
AWA.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. He was like, he said he's got a whole other book just about wrestling written, pretty much.
Yeah, I would read that. I would read that before I read his regular book.
Oh, I would read that book so many times.
When I worked at Pitchfork, we got a copy of his regular book at work, and I like immediately flipped right to the wrestling part. It was only one chapter. I was bummed.
Yeah, he said the editor made him take a lot of it out.
Yeah. Little did that editor know that there were people like us out there.
I know. I know. That one day there'd be a podcast.
Yeah.
Like... cursing their name for taking that out.
Fuck you, editor.
Fuck you.
From 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Fucking up Bob Mould's memoir. Making him write about music. The fuck is your problem?
Yeah. Some of us wanted to know the funny backstage Kevin Sullivan stories.
Yeah.
Well, that's a mythical figure for me too.
Well, you gotta check out his podcast. He's got
what, Kevin Sullivan's got a podcast?
Oh,
everybody has a podcast now.
Yeah.
Kevin Sullivan, the Satanist?
Yeah.
It's great.
It's great. It's awesome. He's got the best memory ever. He remembers everything.
And his voice is just nuts.
Yeah.
Now, did he have
one of the people signing, or taking pictures with people at that convention I went to.
He was. Oh, my God.
I met him at a convention I went to. A couple months ago, filming something too.
Oh my God. Would you say 5'3"? Like maybe 5'4"?
Yeah, he's way. I don't know how they made him look. So he was big. He was huge, right? And he definitely was like a power lifter and intimidating. But yeah, I was shocked that he was not taller than me.
Now, didn't he have a tag team partner named 666?
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably, like, it would make sense, right?
Because I remember reading about it, and I'm like, oh, my God, why don't these guys come up here?
I'm really into this idea that you got into this from a magazine and that so much of it was a mystery to you. Like, it's like I guess that doesn't really happen anymore, but, like, I would be, like I think I am in the line of work that I'm in now because I bought an issue of Hit Parader in, like, 1991 that had Sebastian Bach interviewing Axl Rose.
Yeah, and I loved Hit Parader. I probably had that issue.
Yeah.
It's good, and, you know, when I got interviewed for Hit Parader. I'm in an issue.
Shit.
Yeah, it's like it's still going strong. But what was I going to say? How I got into it was through magazines. It was Pro Wrestling Illustrated. It was Inside Wrestling.
I think it's Inside Wrestling, isn't it?
Yeah, there was like the same company put out like three or four different ones. The Wrestler. There was one called The Wrestler.
Yeah, it was one guy. He was also I interviewed him at that convention. This guy Bill Apter did. All like five of these magazines or whatever, pretty much by himself with a little bit of help, but like wrote most of the copy and stuff.
Well, that is impressive because, and that name is very familiar to me. I used to devour the whole thing and he used to come up, if it's this one guy, he used to come up with, he would divide the whole thing into regions. So you could kind of like jigsaw things together and, yeah, it really put everything I could kind of look at it like it was a universe unto itself, mm-hmm. through like whatever it was, Inside Wrestling, Wrestler, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, whatever it was. I basically every Friday, I'd meet my mom. We'd go to Silver Snail, the old location on Queen Street. Damien, you must know that.
Oh my gosh, yes. And that is for Tom, that was like, that was our, like, I don't know, what's that one in L.A. that's like the big Meltdown Comics or something? Like, so, and Silver Snail's still going strong.
And yeah, and then
Different location, though. She
would buy me one or two wrestling magazines almost every Friday at Lightman's, which is a magazine store that is no more. But they used to have, like, I don't know, eight different magazines on wrestling and you know, karate and martial arts or whatever. So in that section, I would get all those magazines. And yeah, like, we only had, there was no internet. There was only these two shows on Saturday afternoon. 12 to 1 was WWF and 1 to 2 was Maple Leaf Wrestling. And then I realized there's all these other crazy looking people who do these insane things, and I would only read about them.
Yeah, look, yeah. I guess that's like you hear about people discovering punk that way too, you know, mm-hmm. like it was very much like, and I guess that's the problem with, you know, pre-cable wrestling consumption is that you could only watch what was presented to you on your few channels that you had on that dial.
And yeah.
Were you like, I guess you weren't probably into it at the time, but I remember like reading wrestling websites in the, like, the pre-YouTube era in like 2002. And like reading about Ring of Honor shows and trying to imagine what like Christopher Daniels' Angel Wings move looked like. Like being like, what the fuck? Like does he like pull his arms apart? Like what that would mean?
Yeah.
I for me it was like reading about Buzz Sawyer, and I believe his nickname was Mad Dog Sawyer. Mm-hmm. And then Maple Leaf Wrestling, like we were talking about earlier, just jigsawing things, piecing things together, just for no reason, had a promo of Buzz Sawyer, and he was in a dog cage, and he was eating raw meat. And that's the first time I ever saw Mad Dog Sawyer. He wasn't wrestling, but I had read about this guy, and then suddenly I see him 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday morning eating raw meat because he was Mad Dog Sawyer. It was insane. These people like Rock and Roll Express. Mm-hmm. Rock and Roll Express to me, like, are just two dimensional. Like, just, they're just these two guys. I only got to see them, like, you know, since, yeah, like post the YouTube era and the DVD era, when they would release things on DVD, or, you know, we'd trade DVDs. So, and I'm familiar with the Shawn Michaels Bret Hart only because of the, I believe, 3-DVD set, the Bret Hart set, that I ended up seeing later.
There's also a DVD set just about the feud they had with each other leading up to the Montreal Screwjob, which is one of the defining sports moments in Canadian history, I'd say. It's right up there with, you know, that hockey thing.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Well, for me, it was also the, and I only got to see photos of it in these magazines until WWE released it on DVD, but it was the Roddy Piper, Greg the Hammer Valentine dog collar match.
Oh, yeah, that match is incredible.
Yeah, it's like amazing. And I only saw photos of it for years and years and years. And then when I finally got a DVD of it, I was like, I can't believe I'm watching this live. Like, this is actually, it's amazing. So for me, that's like, that's one of the greatest matches that ever were.
Yeah. Like, I think that's the thing, is like WWE's library consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has given life to things that would otherwise, not otherwise for sure, but potentially have been lost, you know? And like, you know, and it just kind of like, thinking maybe years from now, when you have a network where you can just pick up any match ever a la carte, just go through someone's career and just kind of like watch everything they ever did, is, ooh, that's the ultimate wrestling fantasy.
So yeah. When you watch wrestling now, it's not to dip your toe into whatever's happening now. It's to be like, let me fill in the holes on this other thing that was happening in like 1984 when I was just reading about it in a magazine.
For me, it would be, yes.
That's awesome. And
it would be more like trying to chase down, you know, Kevin Sullivan footage or Mills Mascaras footage or stuff like that. That's what I like. I mean, just, you know, leading up to this podcast, you know, going through it and remembering all these old names I haven't thought of for years. Yeah, like I can watch Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson matches all day long.
That's awesome. So before the podcast, Damien sent me this thing that you had sent him, which you made like a role playing game basically about wrestling by yourself as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I did. And I sold it to all my classmates for $1. And I think a dozen or 15 kids in my class bought it. A lot of them bought it. And we played a few matches, but things didn't start rolling until a couple of years later. I brought it back out and we just started playing it every lunch period and then every recess we'd have. And I found the book that I used to record all the matches and who won what. Like, you know, on January 16th, like the number one contender was Randy Savage, and the world champion and intercontinental champion in our league was the Iron Sheik.
Whoa. So, I like your league. Your league sounds pretty interesting.
Oh yeah. And then, but a month later, the world champion was Killer Tonga and Ricky Steamboat.
I don't even know who that is.
He was, he had a couple of names, but Killer Tonga was one of them. And
yeah, who's Killer Tonga? I'm trying to remember.
He had another name.
Is it Samoan wrestler? Or is
yes.
Tonga
yeah.
Wrestler, I mean, or
he feuded with Steamboat in the WWF. And I believe he feuded with Tito Santana too. And his whole move was a chop, and he'd get into the ring wearing kind of like an island kind of dress or something, like one of those, I don't know what you call it, but he was like part of the whole wild. Yeah. Like, well, he's part of the whole wild Samoans kind of, I don't know if he feuded with them, but I think he was part of that whole crew. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, going through these names, like, do you guys remember Corporal Kirshner?
Yep.
I don't at all. Damien had this idea that we were going to play the game, but then I don't have any dice in my house. And also, I've never played a role-playing game ever.
Oh, really? Because
yeah, I know. That's the thing I think is super insane. He's never played any role-playing games.
No, I never. There was a moment in like eighth grade when a bunch of my friends got like really into Dungeons and Dragons, and we pretty much like stopped being friends. Like, I tried to play once, and I got bored after 5 minutes.
Oh, but whoa. You'll love the 80s wrestling game.
Well, I would like it better than Dungeons and Dragons. That's for damn sure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've got my dice. I mean, I could ref, and I could be the ref, and I can roll for you guys. But I'm all ready to play. But I don't know how much time we have. But yeah, it's here. It exists.
I love me a role playing game, and I love me wrestling. So I'm down. But I don't know if Tom's willing to give up his chase life of having never sullied his hands by touching the dice and understanding what THACO means.
I mean, what is that?
You don't know what THACO, see?
No.
THACO means to hit armor class 0. And it's,
does that mean you die?
No, that's what you roll against to find out if you get a hit in Dungeons and Dragons. You see, so, Gary Gygax, who is the genius who invented it, he invented the perfect system of rules by which to play, and THACO is one of the key components of the combat portion.
Yeah, that's one of the flaws of the 80s wrestling game. Is reading this now, I'm like, wow, this is really flawed.
you want to put a fix in to the 80s wrestling game 2?
Well, it's due for an update.
Well, also, especially because, like, I don't know if Hogan's the guy you want to put as your demonstration match in 2016.
He could be like the Donald Trump guy. Like, yeah. there's gonna be a bunch of people who just want to be Hogan now.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true. But here's the thing: is if you look in my rule book, there is a page of the demonstration gameplay, and it's it just shows you how the gameplay would go. And I've pitted Hulk Hogan versus Blackjack Mulligan.
Yeah.
So it's an AWA, NWA game. It's not a WWF game. This is like pre – I think I did this on purpose. So like the game could be – have some cred when I was even – when I was a kid. So I already – like when I did this, Hogan was already the WWF champion.
Okay.
But I refused to put it in the rule book, and I his feud before the WWF was with Blackjack Mulligan – and that's what I put as the game demonstration.
Oh, nice.
Gameplay. Yeah, so I kept it real.
I love the names of the wrestlers because I want to be King Kong Bunny or Carlos Colon.
Man, that's – okay. I don't mean to throw her under the bus, but that's my mom. She typed out the rule book. Also, the demonstration page, it's Demon Station.
Not even is that. I like this because it looks like I typed it.
Yeah, but so there's a few, you know, I don't think she was giving this too much of a second look here, but she wasn't
putting her full energy into it.
No, she just wanted me out of her hair because I was like, you got to type this up.
I like when you go to this section here that is the wrestlers list.
Yes,
I've noticed there's like looks like there's like some sort of like Ric Flair. There's a hometown listed, and
yeah.
Then they are these their powers? What is this number? The 3-digit number beside their name.
Okay, I figured it out. I was having trouble figuring it out too, but the biggest number beside Flair at 64. That's his. Those are his stamina points.
Okay. Okay.
And then I believe his one of them is his speed score.
Okay.
And that helps, I believe, with initiative. see, there's lots of.
This is the best game ever.
You really went in on this. Took a lot of initiative.
Man. Well, here's the thing. On the page that Damien's referencing, I think I just got tired, or she got tired, and she stopped at Andre the Giant, which is the second wrestler, and no other wrestler has their hometown listed.
No, and he doesn't even have any of his stamina or his speed.
Yeah, I think she's just like, look, I'm just going to write, feel free to add your own at the top of the page, and then everybody can just fill it in.
But what's this like 3-digit number, you know, like Ric Flair 243?
Oh, that's their weight.
That's just their weights.
Just their weight.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't put like the columns and the proper titles. But, you know, I was in grade 6 or 7 or something. Grade 6.
No, this is way more initiative than I had at grade, you know, even now. Like,
I couldn't make a role-playing game. I like the idea of playing it and, like, me, like, stumbling through the dark when it comes to this stuff. But I think we're running a little long right now.
Well, I do want to go – yeah, maybe we shouldn't play the game. But I do want to definitely go through this final page of coming attractions of other games that you're working on, because this V game sounds incredible.
The original V game was based on the television series that at the time I was obsessed over.
Yeah.
And so
did you have the doll? Did you have the V doll that came out?
No. What is it, a lizard doll?
Yeah, it's like a guy and you could take off his face and he was like a lizard and make his tongue stick out.
Oh my God. I would love that now.
Oh, I think someone's got an eBay purchase in their future.
Yeah.
Horse racing. You had plans. You had a lot of plans. The fencing game.
The fencing game, yes.
The game is exciting, which takes a lot of luck.
Yes. Kickboxing, kick and box your way through victory.
I like
through victory, like through it. Like you won, just keep going. To lose again.
I like The martial arts series is incredible. There's like Kung Fu, colon, Animal Wars, over 350 different moves. And then number two, Ninja versus Ninja. Try your speed and skill in this fast-paced game. And then number three, Kendo.
Battle with Sticks, a truly exciting game. One sentence. Battle with Sticks, a truly exciting game.
But like these compared to the other games, like Samurai Warrior, Battle with Swords Against Monsters. I don't know. Every other game, it just seems like if you got Kendo for your holiday gift, you would be bummed the fuck out.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. And then I think I was telling Damien earlier that I was surprised most at the Vietnam War game I was working on. Yeah. And it's funny, too, because I didn't even know what the Vietnam War was at the time. So
what is Diane's experiment? That sounds scary. Oh.
Yeah, Diana's experiment, she was like the lead lizard in the V series.
Oh.
Yeah, so these are modules. It's under the modules.
Oh, okay. So this is all for the V game.
Yeah, it's like it was a big deal. So I love that show.
So are these crossover modules then with Scarecrow and Mrs. King and Murder, She Wrote and Airwolf?
No, that's just a typing error. I believe I typed this page out.
Okay. I would love, because I would love a V Airwolf crossover. I think that needs to be made.
See, Airwolf wasn't even a show that I liked, but a classmate of mine liked it. So I figured I'll put that in the listing, and there's then maybe he'd be interested. Yeah, he'd be interested in it. I'm not interested, but he is. I don't even like Airwolf. And Murder, She Wrote, I wasn't really interested in at the time. So there's like, you know, I was more like pleasing my friends who were potential customers.
What 7-year-old was into Murder, She Wrote?
I just knew it was a popular show at the time.
No, hey, you're doing some research. You're going to aim for adults too, not just kids. Murder, She Wrote game. I think honestly, you could have been a role-playing game. You could have invented like Pokemon.
I should have kept going.
You could have kept going.
I got into heavy metal.
God, music ruined your life.
I know. And then I got into punk rock, and then that was it.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I had to go through the last page.
Well, the best part of the page is the last bit. I just want to make a mention. Coming next year, as if these were all done, coming next year, time travel. Time travel is coming next year.
Well, you're going to come back and explain it all.
Exactly. But yes, it's easy to see that music kind of took me off my path.
Well, I just like wonder, did you apply all this creative energy immediately into music? Well, yeah, of course you did, because you made that documentary as a kid. Have you seen this thing, Tom? He made a documentary about Motley Crue. It was Motley Crue, right?
Yeah, it was Motley Crue.
How old are you when you made that?
I was 12, I believe. 11 or 12.
It's like
around the same time as this game.
Wow, were a creative kid.
Once I discovered Motley Crue and Van Halen, that was it. Rat, I was done.
I remember that. Did you ditch your friends that were into role playing games at that point?
No, I think it was like a whole thing at school. Like no one was into it past grade 8. You know,
I had I ditched my friends. I remember the day I came back after I dropped acid for the first time and went to play Dungeons and Dragons with them, and I couldn't close that psychic part of my mind that had been opened up, the psychedelic part of my mind.
Okay, did you play Dungeons and Dragons while coming down from acid, while you're in that like super shitty mood?
Probably. Probably in retrospect, now that I look back, no wonder I quit playing D&D that day.
I had a basketball game the first time I ever came down. The only time I ever came down, because I never did it again. But, I did not enjoy playing that basketball game.
And that was the last basketball game you ever played.
It was close. I think I fouled out on purpose. Like I just started clotheslining people.
That's why I don't like mushrooms, because that's the thing with mushrooms. There's that come down that just is brutal. But you know what? One day we should all do mushrooms and play this game.
Yeah, all right. I'm down. Sign me up.
I'm Carlos Colon. Called it.
All right. Well, we should probably wrap it up there. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your role-playing game with us.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot. Nice meeting you through Skype.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is amazing. Thank you so much, buddy, for coming on the show, because this is awesome. Thank you.
Oh, a chance to, you know, talk about wrestling with you guys is great. I love it.
Well, now you got homework too. You got to go watch Nakamura and report back and see if you're. I have a feeling next time we talk to you, you're going to be talking about going to the G1 Climax series and routing tours around Tokyo Dome shows, and that'll all mean stuff to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't really know what you're talking about, but it sounds exciting.
Yeah, I think like that's the thing about wrestling in 2016. There's a wrestling event. Well, actually, it's been going on for a long time, called the G1 Climax Series. So there you go. It's exciting.
Well, I want to go to NWA Con.
Yeah, NWA Fan Fest.
I want to go to that. I would love to.
I think once you find out, once you start listening to Ric Flair and Kevin Sullivan and all these people's podcasts, we might never.
Ric Flair has a podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Can you subscribe to it and everything on iTunes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I'm doing that. Oh, I'm doing that.
Oh, no. You've opened up a wormhole.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
A wormhole? No, that doesn't make sense. Well, maybe a wormhole. You've got that time travel game.
Just go with it.
I'll go with it. Anyway.
Sorry. A rabbit hole?
Yeah, rabbit hole. Whatever. A hole.
Well, should we do plugs and stuff?
Yeah, let's do plugs.
Danko, do you have anything you'd like to plug for our listeners?
Well, I would say DankoJones.com, and I'm on Twitter.com/DankoJones, Instagram Danko_Jones, and my brand new Instagram account, which I just started last week. It's called Next Level Record Collecting, and that's 1 week old as of right now, as this taping.
It's brilliant. But, it's a brilliant Instagram account. I very much love following it.
And to you, Damien, I promise, and I believe I'm going to adopt this as the phrase for the account, I will not let you down.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you're the target audience for that.
I think I am. Like, I'm learning stuff on there. Like, I did not know that there was a Star Trek bloopers record.
Yeah, it's stuff like, it's real kitschy stuff. And it dates back to the very first radio show I had on college radio called The Great Big Backward Show. And that's all I used to play, is like Sean Cassidy records and Archie Bunker records. And I've had this sitting around for years. And I just decided last week to start posting them.
Well, I think it's probably better than listening to some of them.
This is true. And I've had some at my parents' house. And this whole week I've been going back and forth with my parents going, where's that stash that I had? And apparently I can't find 10 records that I need for Next Level Record Collecting. But whatever, that's my own little crisis. It's my first world problem that I'm going through right now.
That's your want list. That's your Next Level Record Collecting want list.
Well, I own a Carol O'Connor record and I can't find it, which is Archie Bunker's real, like the Carol O'Connor, who played Archie Bunker, he put out a real record and I own it and I can't find it. So sorry, this is my problem.
Does it sound like the beginning of All in the Family?
Like, no, it's him singing real songs. Like,
but does he have that voice like blah, 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 like that?
No, it's not as put on
okay.
as that.
Okay. Couldn't imagine a whole record of that.
But yeah. But anyways, those are my problems. So those are my plugs as well, I think.
All right, well, if you like, you can follow me on Twitter at Tom Bryan and read my stuff up on stereogum.com, Damien.
And you can follow me on social media at Left 4 Damien, and with this podcast and all the other podcasts here, tell your friends about them. Let your friends know if you enjoy it, and help spread the word. That would be a great help.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, Damien.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot my podcast, which you are a very big part of.
Yes, absolutely.
Ric Flair's got a podcast, and so do I. So Damien's been on it many times. In fact, he's the one guest we've had the most on. It's called the Official Danko Jones Podcast. So, sorry. I'm on a podcast. I should plug mine.
And Chris Jericho's been on there, too. So go back and find that one.
And yeah,
wrestling fans.
You've because of Danko, I've been able to meet three of probably the biggest, coolest heroes in my life. You know, Chris Jericho, as we've mentioned, Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, got to interview Duff one time with Danko, and Nick Flanagan. But Nick Flanagan played in Teed Crud Combo, who do have a song called Suck It about Generation X. G Generation X, of course. Not Generation X. Not about the book.
They have a song called Suck It about an entire generation of people.
Yeah.
Slackers.
It was like the first millennial anthem.
Yeah. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully we'll be back next week.
All right.